Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 292, recorded on March 26th, 2016. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as always, is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing awesome. And, yeah, there you go. I'm doing awesome.
Sweet. And Adam Christensen is also here, and he's from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Awesome.
Yeah. Fun week.
What's that? Fun week? Oh, yeah. It did. There was a thing that happened. It was almost... I mean, it felt for me
that this week?
Yeah. It felt for me that it was barely a thing.
New products to order.
I guess there are new products.
It was a thing. A lot of people were focused on very small points from the thing.
I suppose. Yeah. Everybody
you haven't ordered them by now, you're... probably SOL in some cases.
Okay, so there was a new iPad announced.
iPad Pro,
the 9.7-inch iPad Pro. And I was wrong about them calling it not a Pro. So they have two iPad Pro sizes. They knocked $100 off the iPad Air 2. And the iPad Pro, the 9.7-inch iPad Pro, starts at... what is the price on that guy?
$599.
$599 for 32? 16.
Mm-hmm. 16. Or, is it 16
no, it's
or
32.
32, yeah. 32, then 128, and then 256.
Are we sure on that?
Yeah.
Okay, $599 for 32 gig.
See?
Yeah. Yes. So it supports the Apple Pencil. It has its own, what do you call it? A keyboard case? What
smart
is it?
Connector smart connector and smart keyboard.
Smart keyboard. And its own... delightful protruding camera.
Yeah, but that's because it has a 12 megapixel camera, and the camera's better than the one that's in the Pro 12.9.
I just want to drop an F-bomb so bad.
Because of the camera bump?
So fucking stupid. So stupid. Why is there a camera bump on an iPad?
Because it's 6.1 millimeters thick.
Who cares? They could have made it thicker.
Put a bigger camera.
They could have put air in there for all I care. They just need to make it thicker. It's an iPad. It's a surface. You put it on table. Flat table. It's stupid. It's so dumb.
Flip
Why?
It over.
What? Then you can't see it if you flip it over. Adam, you got to think these things through.
Put a case on the back, and then you're okay.
Why? I don't know. I just don't understand why Apple makes these decisions. Why Johnny Ive has
apparently
such a thing for this.
Apparently they wanted a 12-megapixel camera in there.
That's fine. Make it thicker.
And they wanted to keep the body essentially the same size as the iPad Air 2.
Isn't it exactly the same size as the iPad Air 2?
I think it might be.
Actually, yes, you're right. It is.
Okay.
I was thinking it was slightly different because they were saying don't use the smart cover from the iPad Air 2 on the iPad Pro 9, but it's because of the smart connector points.
Yeah, the smart connector they had to move where the magnets were, and besides, it doesn't. I guess the smart cover would fit, but not the smart case because you've got different. Ports because you've got the quad speakers and things are in different places. Plus, you have the LED flash and the camera,
right?
Which is a different size, right? So
are they selling smart covers for this that aren't keyboard?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yes.
They've got all kinds of accessories.
Yeah. My favorite thing. Okay. So the iPad Pro. Has the, what is it, the A9X processor. That's cool. It does all the things that the iPad Pro does, except it has the, what is it called? The ambient light or...
True Tone.
True Tone. That is cool.
Yeah, it's kind of like having ColorSync built into your iPad.
Yeah.
Except not, right? It's actually almost the opposite of color sync.
Well, yeah, in one sense, but okay. So what it does,
it's going to mess your colors up. It's not going to make them color accurate.
Well, okay.
It's one of the things that's been bugging me about people saying
it does. It does make them color accurate for the current ambient lighting.
Yeah. So take us to school, Jeff.
Yeah. So you see what on screen what the colors would look like on paper.
Right.
Under
but
the
mean,
same
if
light.
If you're a designer like me or someone who's worked in printing, it's not you're going for a reference color.
Right.
You're not going for a what does it look like in this room and that room color. You're trying to have a single spec that you're targeting. And this is
now one thing that I did a lot when I was in printing and we were working with customers that had a very specific color needs, mm-hmm. where they needed to know what color was something going to be under specific lighting, and at the time the only way I could do that was with this one software package for the Mac that was like $1,500 at the time. So I mean, it was crazy expensive, mm-hmm. and it would simulate any lighting conditions. Had I had the iPad Pro 9, I could have just popped the file over there and just walked around with it, and I could have seen it in all the lighting conditions that I needed to simulate.
Right.
So I see some real value for people in the printing side for having True Tone. For photographers, I'm thinking they're probably going to turn it off and just leave it off forever.
Yeah, well, I think that the idea is that it's something for consumers primarily that
right.
just makes the experience better.
Makes it more like traditional paper would be, because
yes.
paper is going to reflect whatever room light you have. So if you're using fluorescence, you're going to get that more whitish blue light. If you've got incandescence, it's that more warm glow. And so the idea is the ambient light sensor will now have a thing in them, will detect the color temperature of the light in the room and then adjust the white on the display to match that as if it were reflecting light, which it isn't. It's emanating light. So
yeah.
it's simulating what would happen if the light in the room was bouncing off a sheet of paper.
Yeah. I think it'll be very nice on the eyes. I'm looking forward to experiencing that. I'm hoping they're going to be putting it on the iPhone 7.
I'm sure this is a technology that they're going to roll out across the line.
Right. So I'm excited to be able to use it. It seems like it'll be an enjoyable experience. It's one of those little Apple touches that you don't see other companies figuring out before Apple does. Figuring out that it's something to do.
Yeah, I'm kind of bummed that they didn't put it on the Pro 12.
Yeah.
Probably just wasn't ready.
That's my guess. And so the crappy thing is now we have the 9's rolling out in spring, the 12's rolling out in fall, and they're going to be leapfrogging features on each other all the time. So now it's not a matter of do I need the big screen or the medium screen? It's which screen do I need and which features do I need? So when should I buy?
Mm. You don't see them bringing kind of feature parity into the 12.9 in the fall and then
well, sure.
setting up a new release cycle where they release them at the same time.
They'd need to do both parts. So you'd have the synchronized release cycle, and then you'd have feature parity.
Right.
If they don't synchronize the release cycle, then the 9 will always be ahead of the 12 on features.
Right. So what if they update in the fall the 9? How many people do you think are going to be pissed?
A lot.
But what do you think the likelihood of them doing it is? It seems to me like it's something that they may do. Because
maybe.
You're going into the holiday
yeah.
season and you can bring everything in feature parity and then get on a fall release cycle for iPads.
Yes. And that's assuming they want to have just a fall release cycle for iPads.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would make sense.
I wouldn't put it past them. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it would not shock me. I wouldn't be shocked. And then a bunch of people are going to be like, I bought my 9 in the spring.
And Apple does this on every single product they make.
Yeah, so that's what people say. And you know what? People need to just chill out and enjoy the product that they get, because Apple doesn't really advertise all the bits and pieces of these things, because the experience is the experience and it's good.
Well, also keep in mind that you you need to buy the product you need when you need it.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, and get the best one that you can afford spec-wise.
Yeah, so if you want a dope 9.7-inch iPad that works with the Apple Pencil and or the smart keyboard, then you get that one. And you get it, and you're happy about it. And you're happy that you have the cool True Tone thingy. And if you want the bigger one, then you get that one, and then you're happy with it. And you just don't think about the True Tone thingy because it's kind of gimmicky, and who cares?
Right. Buy the one that you want and that has the features you need. The one thing on this one that was interesting is they're leapfrogging some features and then holding back other features. So one thing photographers aren't going to be super thrilled about. Well, there's two things. One thing they would be thrilled about is there's a 256 gigabyte option on this, right?
Yep.
So first one to have that much storage available. But then they flip it around and they come out with a new camera connector. Right.
Oh, right.
So yeah. Powered camera connector, USB, and an SD card reader, which seems awesome. So you're like, photographer, yeah, that's great. And then it come to find out it has a USB 2 data transfer rate.
Yeah.
Unlike the iPad Pro 12, which has a USB 3 data transfer rate.
Mm-hmm.
Which also means that you can, if you have the, because Apple brought out a new USB-C to Lightning cable.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a MacBook and you have the 29-watt MacBook charger, you can charge the iPad Pro 12 at the faster rate, at the high rate, charging rate.
So it sounds to me like they're, in order to hit the price point that made sense for this size of device, Apple needed to do more than just reduce the number of pixels they're shipping with it and the amount of aluminum, you know, for the casing. Yeah. So they needed to perhaps go to slightly slower storage and less battery capacity, and therefore they have to underclock the CPU a bit as well.
Yeah, that I don't think is going to matter too much.
Just by a touch. Like, I mean, just yeah, it's like 2.5 like, times faster versus 2.4 times faster. I think there was a there's something on either it's a Geekbench score. So the difference is 2.24 on the 12 and 2.16 on the 9. So,
yeah. And it's only got 2 gigs of RAM and not 4 like the 12.
Yeah. But get the one that you want. Get the one that works. Play with it. Get it if you like it. Don't get it if you don't like it.
Yeah. I mean, the RAM thing, it's funny because people bring up the processor specs and the RAM thing all the time after these product announcements. But the reality is that it really comes down to real-world performance. And I would guess that in almost every task, if you had a iPad Pro 9 up against an iPad Pro 12, you're not going to be able to tell the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yep. What else? What else do we have on this? So probably nothing else. So iPhone SE was also announced, starting at $399.
Wait, it does have NFC and Apple Pay.
Oh, does it?
Yes.
That's something.
And the weird thing about it is, did you guys notice with this software release, when I upgraded to 9.3 on my iPad Pro 12.9, it gave me the option to add in my credit cards for Apple Pay.
For NFC-based Apple Pay?
No, that was just the thing. So I'm like, wait, so now I can put credit cards on my massive iPad Pro through Apple Pay, and I could use the camera to put the cards in and stuff like that. And I'm like, well, does that mean this has NFC? No, I tried it out with my Square. There's no NFC capability in there. So I'm assuming it's just going to be for like online payments or in-app payments. But I don't remember it giving me the option to actually add cards. It like added the little
you know, I hadn't noticed
Apple Pay in the system preferences.
Hmm.
Yeah. and I look and settings. my default card is already set up.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure it wasn't there before.
I'm certain it wasn't there before because I just because I am. But so this plays into the whole thing about the reports that were coming out that soon we'll be able to use Apple Pay for a lot of other online purchases.
Yeah. Yeah, they're opening up to the web interface. So websites will be able to use Apple Pay.
Oh yeah.
Not just apps. They're opening up, they have a web API, I guess, that's either in development or is going to be available.
Yeah, there was a story from Recode saying that they're expecting it later this year, perhaps at WWDC. That's when I would expect it. So you don't need to have an app on your iOS device in order to use Apple Pay online. You can just do it through the web page.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's going to be tied into Safari, and you may have to use Safari, but I don't know.
Perhaps. Is it still that you have to use WebKit, the built-in WebKit, in order to display any web view, even if you have a custom browser?
I don't remember.
Okay. Yeah, so that'll be cool. I think I used Apple Pay online one time thus far, and it was to purchase my Apple Watch through the Apple app, the App Store app, or the Apple Store app.
So I do wonder if one of the big reasons for adding NFC to the iPad 9.7 is because you have things that use that size iPad already as like a register. So I wonder if it'll enable the ability for that to accept Apple Pay at some point.
Maybe. That'd be cool. Okay, so iPhone SE was also announced. So it's basically the same body as the iPhone 5,
yep.
Except that the edges are tweaked. They look
they're not.
It's a different finish on the
polished
edges.
Polished anymore, thank God.
So that would imply
that smart move.
That they don't get scuffed as easily. Is that right?
I would imagine. Okay. That's the hope. I mean, we'll have to see what happens now that they're in the wild.
It also has an inset Apple logo that it got from the E6, so it looks a little bit fancier. And they have the rose gold color. Although, did they have a rose gold? I think they...
Oh, no.
No? Okay, so they didn't have a rose gold. So now they have the rose gold.
Same thing on the iPad, by the way. On the iPad Pro, there's a rose gold.
But basically everything with the SE is on par with the iPhone 6S as far as internals. Other than the 3D touch display, and the FaceTime camera is not as good, but everything else, it has the A9 processor, the A9 or A9X?
A9
processor, 2 gigs RAM. It doesn't have the next gen Touch ID.
No,
but it does have a 12 megapixel camera. So for $499 or $399.
$399. It's the cheapest iPhone, like new iPhone price that Apple's ever done.
It is kick ass for that price.
Right.
16 gig.
That's the one thing you have to really make sure people understand. 16 gig.
But that's not a bad storage size.
It's not a bad storage size.
Especially if you're someone
who... Unless you plan on taking 4K video with it.
You can do 4K video on there. So I would say for the most part...
But you get 64 for $100 more, so...
So yeah, you can do that. But if you're one of those people who's like, I'm just going to stream a bunch of music, I'm going to surf my sites, I'm going to go to my, you know, Facebook or whatever, do some Instagram.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's just a phone that will take awesome pictures, it's fast, it's responsive, it can play some good games. If you're not, you know, a heavy iPhone user or a heavy phone user, this thing is awesome. And for $100 more, you can get something that has more storage. I think all the reviews that come in are at this point very positive about this move by Apple. It's pretty much the only modern smartphone that you can get in this size.
Yep. And they all your old cases will fit too.
Yeah. That was a good move.
Which is nice.
Yeah. Nothing has moved.
That is a great decision for Apple. We were, I mean, of course, everybody was hoping for a fancy new design. Nothing's wrong with this design. It works. It's nice. And
a lot of people prefer it. They think it's easier to grip. It's not as slippery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not as slippery. That's for sure. Yeah, I have a buddy.
I've been hearing a lot of people say already that when it's time to replace their iPhone 6, they're going to seriously look at the SE.
Yep. No camera bump.
No camera bump. Yeah. I have a buddy who has an iPhone 4S who's currently using it. And this is a person who like does web design.
Yeah,
I don't know. He's insane, I think, but he's been using a 4S because he likes that size. And I asked him what he thought, and he said it looks like he'll be getting one of those.
You have Apple knows that they have a ton of customers using 5 and 5Ss who didn't want to upgrade to the 6 or the 6S and wanted the 4-inch form factor, but wanted a modern phone. And so, mm-hmm. I mean, this is going to satisfy a lot of customers. I mean, they said it during the keynote. Hey, we heard a lot from our customers, and you know, I think this is basically in response to that. There were all these people that said this is the size device we want, but we want something with the same features and the ability to run the same software and be just as good as those people that are getting the 6 and 6S, 6S Plus.
Yep.
Yeah. I think going to sell a ton of these.
Yeah, I think so too. And it has, isn't the battery life better compared to the 5S?
Yeah, they improved the battery life.
Yeah. Do we know quantitatively?
Apple brought it up in the keynote. I don't have those notes in front of me, but
maybe a couple.
I want to say
hours.
Like an hour or two.
Yeah.
Depending upon the task.
Yeah.
Yeah. Adam, to back up what you're saying about people are going to buy these. Within hours of the SE going on sale for pre-order, the 64 gig space gray was already showing, instead of delivering on the last day of March, that it would ship in the first week of April. And I'm looking now, and available to ship 7 to 10 business days. So it's pushed out even farther. People are liking it.
Yeah, I think they will. Let's see here. So we covered all the different storage spaces, USB 2. Apple released iOS 9.3, finally, after many, many, many versions of public beta, which includes, of course, Night Shift.
You're in mode.
Yeah, so you're a hater, I guess. I enjoy my urine mode.
I scaled mine way back.
I pumped it way up.
Ugh.
As much as possible.
Can you explain the animation thing to me? The warning?
What is that?
I did not see that.
When you turn up the settings for more warmth,
what? Yeah.
There's a little message that appears that says, I'm trying to find it now.
Warmer settings may affect the appearance of some on-screen motion.
Yep.
I'm seeing it now.
Where do you see that?
Slide the color temperature slider to the right.
I don't have it on me.
Okay. So what happens when you're in the Night Shift settings and you slide the little less warm, more warm color temperature slider up beyond the center point, then a little warning pops up right below that says warmer settings may affect the appearance of some on-screen motion.
And so you said it's a pop-up? It's a pop-up notification?
It appears there.
It just stays there.
Okay, so that's why I didn't notice it, because I don't pay attention.
Yeah, and
I don't know. I tried the setting. I tried it. The first day I turned it on, the first day I picked up my phone, I went, ugh, yuck. Because everybody kept saying, oh, it's so gradual, you won't notice it. And I immediately noticed
it. Now, if you're someone that really notices and really gets color, it's really, really obvious. Even when you have it set to the less warm side.
Yeah.
And I've been playing with it on my iPhone. And even with it dialed way down, I can still tell. I mean, it's really obvious to me. But
yeah, it's a sepia look, really. I mean, if I'm being more accurate, I'm saying it's yellow. But I mean, I kind of get it. Feels like you've put everything into the sepia mode if you've ever used that for like iBooks or something like that.
Yeah, it does feel like that. One thing that I noticed with the whole night shift thing on my iPhone 6S, on my iPad Pro, setting it up, no big deal. Everything works. I set it so it's doing sunrise to sunset, so I can just watch and see how this thing really works. On my first generation iPad Air, can't set sunrise and sunset. It's limited to hard start and stop times.
Did you check your settings for time zone?
No.
Yeah, this is a bug that a lot of people have run into. So you may need to go in and reset your time zone settings. For some reason, some people are finding that the setting is either off or just needs to get reset before the feature makes it available, because it's going to use your location. The other thing is double check your location services and make sure that you have them set so that the system can use location. And I want to say is that in the privacy settings now?
Yes, that's in privacy settings. All right.
So you have to go to
time set automatically.
Right. So you have to, the other thing, yeah, you have to go into privacy and you have to check on location services, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's all the way at the bottom. It's system services.
Right.
And then make sure that setting time zone is on and not off.
That's weird. Wait, so if I have...
Interesting. Setting time zone is now off.
Yeah, you got to make sure that's on.
That's on now. So that got disabled at some point, presumably with an update.
Yep.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, see, okay, so in mine, it's set to a certain time. Does that mean I have that same thing going on?
You probably have the same problem, yeah. So there should be an option that says do it at sunrise and sunset.
Oh.
And if you're not seeing that, you have to go into the where I just told Jeff to go.
System services.
Yep. As soon as I went into the privacy settings and changed that, I got all the rest of the settings to show up for night shift. That's totally what it was. You rock, Adam.
Setting time zone, it was on for me.
You might need to toggle it, too, I've read.
You should toggle it.
I don't know.
Oh. I think it was just, it decided on a time. So now I think the setting has changed.
Well, you also, again, you need to make sure that you have your device to set the time automatically based on your time zone.
And yeah.
If you change to that.
Yeah, I have that.
The setting will go away as well, because that's the only way how it knows when sunrise and sunset is.
Which totally makes sense.
And if you move around the country or around the globe, obviously that setting has to change.
Yeah, this isn't working for me. I'm going to have to play with it. It's just set to a certain time between 10 and 7.
Okay, so what you do, once you have everything turned on, tap on the time for setting it, and then you should see the other options.
Oh.
Like sunrise and sunset.
Oh, I have to actually tap on the time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, custom schedule and sunrise to sunset. Hey, look
there
at that.
There you go.
We're like solving people's problems here.
We are.
At the very least, we're solving our own problems.
And when we say we mean Adam.
Thank you, Adam. Didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the problems with this feature, is that it's not very intuitive for people to even understand. Like, I don't know that the OS really makes it that obvious.
Nope, it doesn't.
And it's like, if you didn't know about this update, or if you don't know about how it's supposed to work, you're going to be like, what the heck? And I imagine that Apple in the Genius Bar is going to get a lot of people who turn this on by accident, and then they're like, saying, my screen's all messed up. Yeah.
Yep.
The colors are all messed up on my screen. What the hell?
It's a way to get grandmas back into the Apple Store.
Right? I mean, if my mom does this software update on her iPad, I guarantee you I'm going to get a call.
Nice.
Like, my screen's all yellow. What's... is my display broken?
That sounds awesome. Speaking of which,
you better go see the doctor, Mom.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, the eye thing that people get.
Yeah, you've Look got out. The eye thing,
you've got
Mom.
Let's see. So the 1970 bug is also fixed. There are some new 3D touch quick actions.
Have you tried the 1970 bug since installing 9.3 to see what happens?
No, thank you.
Neither have I. I'm just trusting Apple that they fixed it.
Let's see here. When was my last
when
iCloud
backup?
When
would anybody ever run into that? That's just the thing. Like,
if you have you basically need a younger brother.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So let's see. iCloud. How do I figure out when the last backup is? I'm going to do it. It's going to be very anticlimactic, I promise. Backup. Last backup at 124 a.m.
While you're working on that, what else do we have to talk about?
What do I need to change the time to? So I go into general date and time.
Anything before June 1st, 1970.
Oh, that's going to be really hard to do because I'm going to have to keep flicking and flicking and flicking to go back years. F that. I'm not doing that.
Exactly. That's why it's so funny because
it'll probably take you 5 minutes.
I saw people tweeting like, oh, thank God, Apple.
Oh, this is such a horrible bug.
And I'm like,
how did you end up doing
seriously?
That?
Seriously? People were like really excited that was fixed.
Yes.
Okay.
That's.
People. Come on, people. Come on. Okay.
Only frequent release.
Oh, there was a hiccup with some people's iOS 9.3 update.
Yeah, if you had an iPad 2, you were pissed.
Yeah, so explain to me, because I still am not clear on what's going on here, or what was going on.
So what happens on some iOS devices? So it'll be older iOS devices. You install iOS 9.3, and then one of the first things it asks you to do as part of the activation setup process once it's installed is to enter your iCloud ID.
Yep.
And for some people, they would do that, and that was it. They couldn't go any farther. And so their device was essentially bricked. Now, what I found, because I tried it on a first-generation iPad mini, and I tried it on a first-generation iPad Air, and both of those are old enough devices that they get this extra authentication thing. What they did was once I re-entered my iCloud ID stuff, the setup app looked like it crashed and then restarted. And the process started over, and then I was able to go all the way through. But what some people are seeing is they get to that point where they put in their iCloud account information and they're just done.
Yeah. Apple was aware of the issue and they've already issued a fix, I believe.
Yeah. So if your iPad or any other iOS device fell prey to that and you're just stuck, what you need to do is connect your iOS device to your computer so you can force the update to happen through iTunes, and then you're fine.
Interesting. And after all of these betas.
Yep.
I don't think... I think the problem is like, really, this is really older iPads. So, like...
should have upgraded.
iPad 2 was the you know, the most impacted one, I believe. And I don't know that Apple has a lot of iPad 2s lying around, you know, with people testing it. Would be my guess.
Maybe.
They also probably install the updates most often when they're testing through, you know, who knows, maybe this was an over-the-air kind of thing, because that doesn't pull down the full update. You know, I don't know.
Apple also released tvOS 9.2 with all kinds of goodies for the new Apple TV. You got your Bluetooth keyboard support, Siri App Store search. You can enter text using Siri, which is so nice. So nice.
Yeah, the number one area that is going to be really handy for me, and we've done it already, is doing searches in various apps.
Yes, like, yeah.
For example, YouTube.
Yep. That's where it is. That's where it's at. There's so many things that I considered, hey, I want to watch this thing, but I know I'm going to have to search YouTube for it. And let's just search for it on the iPad and then AirPlay it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. App
and it's
folders.
It's fast. Have you tried it?
The search?
The dictation? Yeah,
it is fast.
It's like incredibly fast. I can barely finish saying whatever it is I'm saying before it like fills in.
Yeah, she's smart.
I don't know
she knows
why it's so fast on the Apple TV when it's not that fast on some of my other devices.
She knows what you're going to say before you say it.
She's smart.
Mm-hmm. Too smart.
Keyboard support, I haven't tried it yet.
Well, you're the one who is all upset about it.
Yeah, I was all ready to try it and then realized I don't have any Bluetooth keyboards sitting around.
Yeah, neither do I. And folders.
Folders, I'm actually liking, although I still wish they were tabs.
Yeah, I wish they had done a tab thing.
I think it's fine the way it is. Honestly, at least for me...
It's kind of clunky and the icons are small. And
yeah.
Well, I think for me, the big thing that this solved was I have a bunch of apps that they're either I want to watch something apps or they're I want to do something apps. And typically the do something, I'm pretty sure in every case actually is a game.
Right.
So I just simply made a games folder and threw them all in there and my life is much nicer now.
Yeah, that's what I did. But again, imagine if that was just a separate tab at the top. So you had your entertainment apps in one tab and you had all your games in another tab. And it was, you got to take full advantage of the TV screen. The problem with the folders is it crams everything into that little box.
Mm-hmm.
And square is not really the shape of my television.
Yeah, there's a lot of wasted space.
Yeah. Eh.
So it's weird. It's just, it's not, Apple's always been about optimizing the UI for the type of screen, right? And in this case, they're not really doing that. They're cramming an iOS, you know, phone concept or iPad concept onto a large screen TV. And it's just, I think they could do better. That's all.
I think it works fine.
It does work fine. But that's
but it
not
could work
what,
better.
Yeah, that's not typically how Apple solves problems. They don't go, oh, yeah, we want to make the thing that's just okay.
Guys, better is the enemy of good enough.
Yeah.
I'm going to be working for the government. Don't.
God.
Don't mess with me on that one.
Talk about, you know, great mediocrity.
Actually, so you said it's square. Your TV's not square. I agree. And neither are the folders. Those are rectangular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still
I'm
not
with
max.
Adam.
It's still
it works fine. It
display.
Works fine. Apple Watch. Apple Watch. OS 2.2 was released with multi-watch support. Which is nice.
There are some. That?
Oh yeah, I got three of them.
Excellent.
At the new price, heck yeah.
You know, okay. So even though I'm not using multi-watch support, the multi-watch support feature that I'm really enjoying, which is totally stupid for me to be excited about this.
It is stupid, but I like it too.
Is that even when you have a single watch, and it shows up in the watch app, it shows a visual representation of your watch with the complications that you have set up.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing it doesn't do is move the crown to the opposite side. You know, so if you're wearing the watch like I do, where it's on your right wrist, so the crown should be on the left, the crown's still on the right. But still, the fact that it shows your watch with your complications is kind of cool.
That is cool. I like it.
Nifty.
It is nifty.
What else is in a watch? I mean, there's not much else in Watch 2.
So there are some bug fixes, optimizations, and there the Maps app has been tweaked a bit.
Oh, that's right. Does it have the, it has the nearby stuff?
Nearby and directions too. It seems a little bit faster.
Yeah, so you can do directions to home, directions to work, nearby places. And yeah.
I've totally killed my Apple Watch, just for the record.
You've killed it?
Like the screen, I have massive scratches on my display.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to spend the extra money next time to get a stainless steel sapphire one.
Huh. Interesting. I have not had that issue.
Yeah. Well, I work in the yard and stuff with it. And you know, I think it's just gotten banged around.
Yeah, I mean, have soft
hands. You can't tell when the display is on, but when it's, you know, when the display's off, it's there's like a couple of huge gouges.
Hmm.
And I'm a little bummed about that.
I know for sure that the next Apple Watch I get is not going to be a black case. That is for sure.
Why?
Because it doesn't go with any other bands, really. It's such a pain to get bands that look decent with it.
Yeah, that's why last minute, that was a Ken Ray. I have to thank Ken Ray for that because he brought that up. I was all set to get the black one or the space gray one, and then he brought that up, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of true.
Yeah, I did get another band recently on Amazon, Elander. It's a suede band. It comes with silver, I guess they're called lugs,
mm-hmm.
adapters. It came with the silver ones, but I had already purchased the black ones for the, originally I purchased just some black lugs and a, you know, just a random band. The band, of course, that I purchased separately was too small, so it looked a bit weird, but this one was specifically for the Apple Watch, just the proper size, and I just swapped out the silver lugs for the black lugs, and it looks pretty good. But I'm definitely getting a silver watch, you know, next time.
I picked up a blue leather loop band, 38 millimeter, off AliExpress.
Mm.
And I think it looks really good on the black watch. But the next time I get an Apple Watch, I will really be thinking about, do I want black or do I want gold?
Mm. Yeah.
So that gold, that satiny gold, I think looks really nice.
Yeah, and there's definitely a history... watch-wise with gold watches and a myriad of band choices. Especially if you go with a leather band. And actually, Apple has finally done something to facilitate these sorts of questions. They have a little gallery on their site now where you can just, you just pick the size and the finish of the watch. You pick your case. And then you click over and you can go to bands and you can play with all the different bands and mix and match and see what looks good. It's really cool. Have you guys seen that?
I haven't played with it yet, but yes.
It's, what do you think about the new spring collection?
I like it. I'm considering getting a green one, the forest green band. I really like all these colors. I like a lot
forest
of
forest green.
Yeah, the is it forest green? Mint sport.
The mint green?
The mint green. Yeah.
That would look good with black, probably.
It does look pretty good. It looks pretty good. And you've also got the nylon. I don't know how I feel about the nylon because at
nylon.
First, well, it's hella expensive. For nylon.
$50?
$50, come on. And you don't even get a watch adapter that you can unscrew.
$50 for fluoroelastomer is expensive too.
Is it $50 for the fluoroelastomer?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay. I mean, given
I've never bought an Apple band because I would really love a classic buckle and I love some of these new colors, but $150 for a little strip of leather is just, it's ridiculous. Sorry.
For what it's worth, though,
I can buy a whole cow for that.
The quality of the bands that Apple sells are just, you can't beat it.
I get it. Yeah.
I get it too, but have I bought any more bands from Apple? Have I bought any at all? No, I have not. Because I just can't justify needing that in my life.
So I can have 7.5 $20 leather bands off of Amazon, or I could have one Apple one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I would again like to point out that it looks like the nylon bands. I don't believe you can unscrew those and put something else in there, like the leather buckles.
Oh yeah, because they loop around.
Right.
Yeah, it's a different setup. But yeah, the gallery's cool. It's very cool.
It is cool.
I like it. Let's see here. What else? Yeah, we mentioned that they dropped the price by $50, right?
Yep.
So it was...
Just on the sport models, though.
On the sport models. They're pretending the edition doesn't exist.
Yeah, kind of. Apple's really not talking about the edition anymore.
You can't... Pretty
it's
difficult
there,
to find.
Just not really talking about it.
Yeah, when you hit buy, you can either buy a sport or you can buy a stainless steel.
I think they want the edition to be kind of exclusive to the higher end retail partners that they work with, right? I mean, isn't that kind of the idea behind that?
I guess they're not hiding it as much.
It's right there on them.
It is right there.
It's just below. Oof. It's kind of down next to the Hermes Apple Watch edition.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's on the page, but I think they want that to be more of a retail experience where someone walks into a high-end, you know, watch shop on Rodeo Drive and they like sell them a gold Apple Watch.
Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing they're going to keep these prices for the sport when we see the next version.
That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah.
I would imagine they even keep on this edition of the sport and drop it another $100 or something.
Ooh, I hadn't thought about that. I bet you're right. And this becomes their easy entry point watch.
Right. Yeah.
So when Apple Watch 2 comes out, you know, it'll be at the new, you know, the higher price point.
When are we expecting?
Lower price point.
When are we expecting the new Apple Watch?
Maybe fall.
Really?
Yeah. I would imagine that would be a good time, again, because you're going into the holiday season.
Well, and perhaps they're trying to wait for technologies to settle out in a way that it makes pricing sense.
Well, they have all the health stuff. I mean, the health announcements that they made at this event, too, were pretty significant. And I imagine there's going to be more stuff for developers at WWDC. Mm-hmm. And they probably are. I mean, I think it's fair to assume there's going to be some new sensors and some new health technology
right.
in the next generation watch. So, you know, it makes sense that it would all come together in the fall. If they don't do it in the fall, then my guess is they're on it'll be next spring because they'll be on a 2-year upgrade cycle, which for the watch actually kind of makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. If they do keep this or turn this into a 2-year cycle, I'd have no problem with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Adam, I'm
Wall
totally
Street
with
will
you.
Have a problem
sensors.
With it.
Of course they will.
I don't want it a 2-year. I mean, right now, like financially, it'd be nice if I didn't have to purchase both a fancy watch and a fancy new phone this year. but yeah. I'm prepared to.
Yeah, but I think most consumers are probably pretty happy to upgrade an Apple Watch and even a phone every 2 years. It's funny because people are, you know, talking about the SE and you know, why are these cycles going down? Or even on the Mac side. You know, release cycles are leveling out. And
that's
I think
good.
It's because technology, but technology has gotten to a point where I think it doesn't require the upgrading. And really the only people that really care about upgrading every 6 months or a year are, you know, a small segment of Apple's market, which is, you know, the tech nerds like us. We want the new stuff, but by and large, consumers have been waiting. And I think that's what the iPhone SE is all about. Like I said, I know tons of people who are like, my 5S or my 5, it's totally fine. I don't want to upgrade my phone. I like this phone. It's great. It works for me. I don't really care. I don't need all those new features. And they're perfectly happy to wait. And so I think Apple's going to have to adjust to their market rather than like their analysts and Wall Street and the tech community, because that's long-term better for their bottom line.
Yeah.
I mean, who cares if we sell, you know, a couple million to early adopters if everybody else is largely ignoring it, because we still got to ramp up production. We still got to deal with the R&D and all this other stuff. We're spending a lot of money to serve a small percentage of our market. And Apple's always been really good at understanding their market and making sure that their product cycles and their products go to the largest portion of their audience. And again, Wall Street and analysts and tech nerds like us, we hate that, but it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Yep.
And an Apple Watch every year doesn't make sense. Apple just doesn't sell enough of them. There's not going to be that much consumer interest. There's only so much innovation that they're going to be able to cram in. The one thing, if they can get it in there, if they can get GPS in, that'll be a huge update. I mean, that, I think that's what most people I talk to want. They're like, I don't want to take my phone with me when I go running. And the whole calibration thing, while it's okay, it's not really good. I know a lot of runners and cyclists who are like, I still have my Garmin because I really need that for the accuracy. And the Apple Watch just doesn't meet the needs. And I'm talking, these are people who are, you know, serious about their running and their training and stuff like that. I hear it over and over again from them. The casual person who's just doing it for extra exercise, they're kind of okay with it.
Yeah, but I'm fine.
Like hardcore people who are training for triathlons and you know, marathons and stuff like that, the Apple Watch doesn't cut it.
Yeah, the I haven't gone out with just my watch in many months now, mainly because the music situation just doesn't work for me. It's primarily about the music. I've been, like I said, listening to a lot of the Beats One shows, but even before I was doing that, it was just such a pain in the ass to get the music to sync properly and quickly. It was a real pain.
Yeah, that quickly is a big point.
So long.
There's nothing that goes quickly when it involves changing stuff on an Apple Watch.
And the thing is, if you change the wrong thing in your music settings, for example, there's a high potential. I've had multiple occasions where the music on my watch just went bye-bye because I changed something that affected the way I was syncing my music, that it didn't tell me that it was going to change my music on my watch, but suddenly I was getting ready to go out for a run and I look at my watch and there's no music there. Yeah. And it says, hey, if you want music on there, you're going to have to sync it to the watch. And of course that means waiting like an hour and a half for 10 songs. So
can you imagine if they could get GPS and cellular in there?
Ooh, that'd be nice.
With this big cord running off the watch to a belt pack with a battery.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because I was talking to some people about some of the Garmin watches, and they get pretty good battery life with the GPS. I don't know about cellular. That's a whole nother thing. I don't think we're going to get there. But I think Apple could figure out GPS for the next version and at least have it as an option. I think would be a good call. I really do.
That would be a compelling upgrade feature.
Yeah. But I think 2 years apart is fine for that. I don't know that it has to happen in the fall. Fall makes the most sense from a sales perspective, I think, if they can have something ready. But I'd rather see them not rush it. You know, if they can't get GPS in there, well, wait another 6 months, see if you can solve that problem.
I'm telling you, blood glucose and faster. That's all I want.
Yeah.
If they can do a blood glucose,
I mean, there's no doubt it's going to be faster.
Oh, please, God. Please, God, let it be faster. It needs to be faster. DOJ has pumped the brakes on the whole Apple thing, the government OS mandate.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, hey, hold on a second, we might be able to get into it. Let's not do the whole thing that we were going to get into. A day before, the same Monday, Apple announced all these products. They said, hey, we think we can get into it. Never mind. Let's postpone.
Yep.
Yeah.
Boy.
So all these media people that were flying across the country so that they could be there for the hearing, the news comes down most likely while they're in the air.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So where they are right now, it tells me there's two things happening. One is that the FBI thinks that they legitimately may have an alternative way to get into this specific iPhone. And the other thing that's happening is that they totally get that the case that they're trying to push right now is not nearly as strong as they thought it was.
And it's important that they win when they do push one of these cases through.
Right. And this is not the case where they're going to win, at least not with the way they're presenting it right now. And so they need to stall it. They need it to go on hold. So this gives them an extra couple weeks to work on whatever their case is while they figure out if this alternate procedure is going to work. And if it does, they can drop this case. But that doesn't mean that the fight is over. The fight has already started and is going to continue for a very long time.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. The fight had started in Congress before this event happened, even.
Right.
I mean, it just wasn't as publicly known. You know, people in the tech community and the privacy community and security communities kind of knew it was happening, but the public at large really did. The one thing I really want to know is what technique, because all of the research that I was doing up until a couple of days ago was that seemed to indicate that the NAND mirroring technique was going to be it. But the FBI came out and said officially that that's not the technique that they're using. They won't say what they're using or who they partner with. There's a guess. Some people have a guess. It's an Israeli company, right?
Yeah, yes. Celebrate.
Celebrate.
I thought it was pretty much confirmed that they indeed signed a contract, a $15,000 contract.
Well, there were already contracts in place, FBI DOJ contracts with Celebrate, and have been for years.
Okay.
So people may be referring to prior contracts, thinking that's what this contract is. As far as I know, we don't have any official confirmation. What we do have is admission through omission.
Right.
Because Celebrate right now is the company that is not saying we are not doing this.
Right.
Huh.
Yeah. But the weird thing is the FBI did deny the whole NAND copying thing. And that, with all the different techniques I've seen thrown out by security experts.
And how does that work?
So basically, they would go in. They would desolder the flash memory chips, mm-hmm. and then clone them. So then you have a cloned version. It'd still be encrypted, fully encrypted, but you have an exact clone. And then you could either load that in, most likely load that into a virtualized environment where you could run your cracking software against it. And then when you hit the 10th attempt, you just basically reflash the image with your original copy that you pulled off the chip.
Sure sounds like it'll take a long time.
Not that long at all. I mean, it's going to be if they were able to do it against the actual device at the rate they wanted, like if Apple had written government OS, it was going to take like 30 to 40 minutes. So I imagine it would be within hours using this copying technique. Because the other thing is they can copy it to multiple machines. They can copy it, you know, thousands of times. They can have stuff running in parallel.
But don't they still need to have the authentication? Don't they have to still run it through the device?
No, not at that point. There's some techniques. And one of the ways they could do is they could clone the chips and then solder back on like a socket. So they could just drop a chip in, run it. And that would take a little bit longer, but again, it would work. Yeah, it would still work fine.
We thought.
Yeah, and they just keep basically rewriting the chip from the original image that they have. But they don't even have to go that far from what I understand in some further reading. If they can identify where, because basically what happens when you do the failed attempts, it doesn't do anything other than destroy the key, right? So there's a key on the device that once it's validated and said, okay, that's the passcode, it uses that key to open up the device. With the 10 failed attempts, all it does is destroy that key, meaning that now there's no key to get back into the thing. So they can also identify within the memory where that bit is, you know, what part of the code is getting destroyed, and then just rewrite that to the flash. So they could take their copy and just rewrite back in just that one little piece, which would go faster than re-imaging.
Yeah, definitely.
The whole thing.
Definitely.
So that significantly speeds it up as well. But that was the technique. But the FBI said, no, that's not what we're doing. And so all the other techniques that I've been reading about, though, have the potential for actually destroying the device.
Right.
They're not non-destructive, which is the whole point of what they were doing. So this has to be some new technique that either people don't know about, or so, and Apple is really wants to know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it's not clear if they'll be able to figure that out or not. The best hope, I think, for Apple is if this technique does not work and they have to go back to trial, because Apple could ask as a discovery, hey, you got to tell us what you tried, you know, as we go into this trial, because part of the argument is that Apple is the only one who can do this for the FBI, right? In the original order, it's like, you guys are the only ones who can do this for us. So if it comes back to the trial and the FBI goes, well, that didn't work, Apple would presumably have the right to request, hey, what technique did you try? Because we want to know.
And they could
alternative techniques.
Yeah, they could subpoena that information even if it does work.
Oh, okay.
And that comes from one of the executive orders that President Obama signed in effect a while ago, that requires the government to tell companies about zero-day exploits. And there are certain situations where the government can withhold that information, but
like national security.
Yeah, but it would be. I think that even under these circumstances, the FBI and DOJ would have a difficult time saying that this is a national security situation where Apple shouldn't know. But of course, they would try. But the thing is, of all the various exploits that the government has discovered, it's been like hundreds, I think, and they've withheld information on like four. So the precedent is when they find this stuff, they turn it over to companies.
Yeah, and of course we'll never know, because even if Apple gets the information, they're not going to make it public.
Oh no, of course not.
But the NAND flash. The NAND mirroring thing sounded cool to me. It sounded like that would be a way to go. And it was going to work on any device.
Right. But apparently that's not it. And I'm sure some people are thinking, oh, well, the FBI is just lying to obfuscate what they're really doing. And it's not in their best interest to lie about this, because the likelihood that we will, before that long, know what they're doing is pretty high. So this isn't the sort of thing that they should be lying about.
Yeah. And by the way, for people who are wondering, so this NAND mirroring thing, I mean, it's not anything that you can tell by how the technique works. There's not a lot of ways that Apple probably could even ever protect against that kind of a hack. So your best protection, if you're wondering, is don't use a four-digit passcode. Use an alphanumeric that's got some length to it,
yeah.
And then even using this technique, they can't crack it, because just the time involved would make it unfeasible.
Yeah, four-digit passcodes are a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's only, and even a six-digit, if it's only digits, you know, do a six-digit alphanumeric or longer. The longer, the better. But if you're like, I want to really protect my stuff from this kind of hacking, because it's not just the government that knows this technique. It, you know, hackers use this technique as well. So,
yep. Okay, and my favorite thing that was announced during the event was the robot.
Yeah, Liam.
Liam.
That was my favorite. He's got a little dance he does, a little theme song.
Yeah, apparently he can disassemble a phone in, what, 11 seconds?
Yeah.
That's pretty hardcore.
What do you guys think about the first scene or the first image, the first little clip in the video showing an iPhone with a completely flush camera?
No.
No.
It's the iPhone 7, guys.
No.
It's the iPhone 7. Come on.
It's an angle thing.
No, it's not. It's definitely not an angle thing. Because they show you another angle edge on, and there's no protrusion. So it's no. Either a prop or...
No, I'm not buying it. I analyzed that video. I don't think that's
It's not accurate. An iPhone 7.
No, but I don't... I think it's just a camera angle thing. Still.
It's an iPhone 7.
Not buying the
theory. Okay, Michael. It can be your
yeah,
iPhone
Apple
7
is
unicorn
that
model.
Dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I like the robot. He's cool. They got him to dance.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, I mean, it's an R&D project, right? And there's probably only one of him at this point.
There's one. They want to get another one in Europe soon. And I guess
but I mean, how many of these guys are they going to need to actually disassemble the millions and tens of millions, hundreds of millions of phones out there?
Well, I mean, it depends on how fast they want it to happen.
Right.
So they can have just a warehouse full of them. They can have Liam rocking and rolling 24/7.
Gotta have a Liam army.
Ooh, that sounds dangerous. But I guess from, was it Mashable that went?
Mm-hmm.
It's much bigger than what it seems in the video. It is a multi-robot. Right, there are a lot of pieces. It takes up like a warehouse for this guy. There's an assembly line of different tools for that are specialized. And I guess it has a lot of interesting redundancy built into it so that a particular portion of the line can go down for up to 30 minutes and it won't cause any backups.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is interesting. But I think it's right now just working on the iPhone 6. But
right. Well, and also your conspiracy theory 7.
Right, yeah, of course. But I think they're working on it. It's really cool. I love it. It's a great idea. And they claim that they're the first company to do something like that.
It's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
And Apple does have this thing where they are very environmentally conscious.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they have this thing where they have buttloads of money and...
They have that too. They have so much money, they can design a robot whose sole purpose is to disassemble an iPhone, and they can name the robot Liam.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it's not an acronym.
No, well, it's some just
people,
his name.
Some people come up with...
Maybe they plan to first deploy them in Ireland, because they did say they were going to, you know, commit more resources there.
Someone said the acronym is Likes Imagining Annihilating Humankind or Mankind. Probably. Yeah. Most people assume that any robot that can move around is always considered.
Maybe we should ask Siri if Liam has plans to destroy mankind.
Okay. What do you think of Liam?
I really couldn't say.
Oh, well, that was cool.
They did it in the keynote, right? I forget what they said, but...
Hey, oh, Siri, is
she
Liam
said he really
going to destroy mankind?
Let me think about that. Here's what I found on the web for a Liam going to destroy mankind.
You probably found something there. Did you notice, it wasn't Phil, was it Jaws who said, hola Siri? But the kind where it activates it?
Yeah, he just said it really slow. He said,
"No, it was
Siri.
Okay, then it was Phil who said it.
It was Phil, and then he told everyone why he did that, because he didn't want to activate everyone's phone.
Oh, it was Phil who said it slowly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then Jaws was probably the one who.
So apparently, that's the trick. You can just make a huge pause between the two words, and it won't work.
I like Hola Siri or Yo Siri. So, I guess they don't listen to the show.
I'm really surprised.
I know, right? They probably just listened to Gruber's show. So, with that, let's do some picks, unless you guys have anything else to talk about. Are you guys getting the new iPad? You guys going to downsize?
Nope.
Nope.
Okay.
The 12 is the right size for me, for my iPad Pro.
All right. Sounds good. All right, Jeff, what's your pick this week?
I'm picking a movie.
Sweet.
And it's available on iTunes.
Okay.
And it's called The Last Man on the Moon. And it's this amazing documentary about Gene Cernan.
Oh, I saw the preview for that. It looked really stupid.
Oh, it is not. It is fantastic.
Because, I mean, I've seen a lot of videos with Gene Cernan, and he's very, like...
He's a rocket boy. He's a flyboy astronaut with the personality to go along with it.
He's very into the fact that he was the last man on the moon.
Well, that's probably because
the way
they cut things together in the video that you saw. His when you see the movie, there's a lot more to it than that.
Okay,
because he's like really open about what the Gemini, Mercury, and Apollo space programs, what effect those had on the astronauts and on their families.
Ah, yeah, okay.
And it's just this really interesting look at the whole space program from the perspective of the people that were there at the end of the Apollo era.
Hmm.
And it's just really, really good. I really liked it. And so what they do is that they have Gene Cernan and they have his best friend who is called Baldy.
Naturally.
Yeah. And they were like best friends, in the military, and they flew together, and then Baldy goes off to fight in Korea while Gene is off learning to be an astronaut, and they even look at what sort of psychological impact that had on a military man, Gene, who was not on the battlefront. And feeling like he was letting his country down because he was off playing in these space simulation trainers and learning all of this space mechanics stuff where they had to do all this crazy math and he wasn't defending his country like he felt he should be.
Mm.
So anyhow, it's really, really well done. I was lucky enough to get to see the first public screening, which was at the Boulder International Film Festival, and Gene was there.
Cool.
And he did a Q&A afterwards, and it was just a lot of fun, and it was a really, really awesome video. So it's available on iTunes, so you can go check it out.
Yeah. Awesome. I'll have to check it out then.
I think you like it.
I saw a preview and it looked very self-serving when I first saw the preview.
That's the way the preview is cut together.
Okay. Well, I'll check it out then. Cause I'm a sucker for watching space videos.
I think you're going to like it.
Yeah. All right, Adam, what's your pick?
I'm going to pick, and I'm kind of cheating because I picked this all week on my show and on the Mac show, but I don't have anything else. So it's still a good pick. So I hate having picking up my device and looking at the screen and it's all like greasy and gross and icky.
So you're going to pick some soap?
I am going to pick some cleaning cloths. So the guys over at Cult of Mac, they have a site called cultcloth.co, and they sell packs of like cleaning cloths for your iOS devices. And they're actually the ones that I really like, the style that I really like, which is kind of like this, it's like almost like a terry cloth material. So it's like it's a microfiber cloth, but then it has a little texture to it. Mm. And they always work best for like getting the grease and grime off. Because I've tried the other like just straight microfiber stuff and it just tends to smudge things around.
Yeah.
And also another problem I have with a lot of cleaning cloths is a lot of them are tiny. Which is fine, I guess, if you just have an iPhone. But when you have, like, an iPad Pro, like, you need a large cloth. So they have these in 8x8 and in 12x12 sizes. And then they also have a what they call a polishing cloth that's more of the just soft microfiber cleaning. And that's good, like, once you've used the larger one, what they call the polished cloth, or the clean cloth, and then you go after it to just shine things up with the other one. And the other thing that's nice about the polished cloth is it's good. I wear glasses, so that comes in handy for just like cleaning my glasses as well.
So you like both, or you which one do you
like? I like both. Yeah, so what I think their best deal is they have the what they call the polish packs, where you can get either one of each size, two of each size, or three of each size. I got the two of each size, so 2 8x8s, 2 8x8 polished cloths, and 2 12x12 cleaning cloths, and they're $23 for all of those. Neat. So I think it's a good deal. I think they're really good, high quality. I like the guys over at Cult of Mac, so that helps too. I think they're good guys, and it's well worth checking out. So cultcloth.co for all of your cleaning cloth needs for your iOS devices.
I bought at Macworld 2007. Some eye clear.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Omar and I both, yeah. we went in halvesies on a bottle of the eye clear spray in the rag.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have like half of it left. I'm surprised they're still in business at this point.
Yeah. I mean, and that kind of stuff is really good when things get really, really grimy.
Mm, yeah.
I'll do that every once in a while. But I mean, just for like day to day, throw a couple of these in your bag and you'll be like, you'll be
set. Yeah, it looks like the cloth included in the cult cloth is basically the same material that I have from them, and it's definitely.
Yeah, they're really. My I don't favorite. Know what it is about these. They're really soft because I've had this other style from some other places, and these just seem to work really well.
They do.
I think they mention on their site something about they kind of pre-crush the fibers, or they do something to the fibers before they ship.
Oh.
So I don't know if it makes a difference or not. But
so what does it make them softer, more absorbent?
I think it makes them a little bit softer.
Mm.
Yeah. And you can kind of feel that when you pick them up. I've had these other kind of terry cloth ones, and they have more of a tooth to them. These feel a little bit softer, but they still, because of the texture, it's still good at like removing, you know, the grease and stuff like that. You don't find that you're having to like constantly rub on it.
Cool.
So I don't know. I like them. And as a matter of fact, I'll even admit they had sent me some and I lost them and I begged them to send me more. So
that's awesome.
You didn't just buy them like a good person?
No, Irfan told me about them about a year ago and then I realized I didn't have mine anymore. I'm like, dude, yeah, I'm going to use that. Nice. But I would buy them in a heartbeat. I think what they're charging for them is a good deal. So,
okay.
I think people are not going to be disappointed. And they're 100% guaranteed. So if you try them, you don't like them, send them back. They'll give you your money back.
Okay. All right. So my pick, did I pick 11/22/63 yet?
I think so.
I did?
Yes.
I did.
I want to say last week.
No, that was the People versus O.J. Simpson.
Yes, you have at some point. And it's been relatively recent.
Okay. So, yeah, go check that out. So my pick then this week.
Is that the Stephen King book?
It is, but I'm talking about the series on Hulu.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you picked
that. I did pick that, now that I think about it. So my pick this week is going to be Sonic the Hedgehog.
Woo!
And that's because it's on the Apple TV now, which is very cool.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, you can grab Sonic. So yeah, I already purchased it. I was very happy. I just hit download.
Even though I already had it through Provenance.
Same. Yeah. But it's nicer because, you know, at some point, Provenance, you have to reinstall because of the 90-day signing thingamabob, yep. And it's always a pain in the butt. This work, and it's made for the Apple TV. It works really well. It has Game Center.
60 frames a second.
It's dope. It's great. But it's... See, now the thing is, so you can play as Sonic, Knuckles, or Tails.
You have to unlock the others, right?
How does that work? So it's just Sonic the Hedgehog 1, which didn't ever include them, did it?
Right. No, I don't think it did.
Okay.
It's been so long.
I know. How do you know how to unlock them? Have you played enough to unlock it?
Nope.
Okay. It's a really solid game. I actually, speaking of Genesis games on the Apple TV, did you ever play Road Rash?
Yeah.
Okay, so I
forgot about that game.
I put Road Rash on, thinking, you know, fond memories, and oh, man, that is a piece. That game sucks. It's a boring game. But Sonic is good. Sonic is a good game. Do we know how much it is? It's not going to show me because
like $4.99.
Okay,
$5.
Because I've downloaded it. Although I can hit the little copy link thing, and it'll show me.
It's $5.
No, it's $2.99.
Oh, even better.
$2.99. So Sonic the Hedgehog for $2.99. Go check it out. If you have an Apple TV, especially if you have a game controller for your Apple TV, which you should because it's fun. It's awesome. Tons of fun. Play Sonic the Hedgehog. So yeah. I need to find some other good games for my Apple TV.
Apparently there's cheat codes.
Ooh. All right.
I'm waiting for the Lego games to come to Apple TV.
Mm.
It's disappointing that they're not there yet.
Yeah. All right. So with that, you can find all of the picks in the show notes at theiosshow.com. Please review the show in iTunes. Leave a rating. Put a review there and tell a friend if you know somebody who would enjoy the show. Feedback at theiosshow.com is the email address to which you can send your questions, comments, feedback, all that stuff. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen is at the Mattcast, mattcast.com, and at Mattcast on Twitter and probably on Game Center if you want to play with him on Sonic the Hedgehog.
And I just read the unlocking. You have to complete the game as Sonic to get Tails, and you have to complete the game with all the Chaos Emeralds to get Knuckles.
Ooh, wow!
Yeah, that's never going to happen for me.
What is the Chaos Emeralds?
I don't know.
That's funny. I played it as a kid on a Sega Genesis, and I don't know what the Chaos Emeralds are.
Oh, that's what it says.
I bet you're going to find out soon.
No, I'm not. I'm not even going to get Tails. I'm not even going to beat it at all. I promise.
That's a lot of play. That's a lot of play time.
It is.
We're busy people.
Yeah. We pretend to have things to do.
Yeah, that's how we roll.
Jeff Gamet, he's at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. TMO, a Daily Observations podcast every weekday.
Yep, every weekday, and it's always awesome to be here.
And it's awesome to have you, and you're on Twitter, too, at JGamet.
Yes, I am.
Check that out. And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. Yeah, that's pretty much it. We'll see you next time on The iOS Show.
An iPod. An iPod. Internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck, yuck. Yuck, yuck, no. Yuck, 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 no. Yuck, no. Yuck, yuck, no. No, 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 no. You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers. Our fingers. Our fingers. Our fingers. Our fingers. Yuck. Our fingers. Yuck. Communicator. An iPod. A phone. Are you getting it? An iPod. A phone. An iPod. A phone. An internet communicator.